Clear for takeoff, runway 28 left, fly runway heading.
Welcome to another brand new episode of Living in Flight, your go-to podcast for everything in the world of aviation. Exclusive interview conversations with industry professionals and enthusiasts. Strap on your seatbelt.
Put on your headset.
And get ready for Living in Flight.
Hey everyone, it's Matt and Drew, and we're back with another episode of Living in Flight.
Today we were fortunate to sit down with Zach Griff of The Points Guy.
Zach is a former consultant who now travels the world reviewing his experiences on all things airlines, airports, and hotels. His passion for aviation and the travel industry is abundantly clear and was evident through his stories and adventures.
We all have busy schedules, especially dealing with someone who is at airports more often than we are. But Zach was flexible enough to join us remotely, and we are thankful for that. Let's get to it.
Hey there, everyone. I am Zach Griff. I am a senior reporter for The Points Guy. Of course, hopefully a lot of you have heard of The Points Guy. We are a massive online travel, multimedia brand. Got the website where we, publish a bunch of articles. We got social media channels. All of them are at The Points Guy. And my contributions span a lot of our verticals, but I focus a lot of my time on aviation, airlines, airports, a lot of the passenger focused experience that, we're all, certainly I love. So new airports, new airplanes, but, things like route updates and all that stuff fall into me. So you hopefully you've read some of my stories. You can find me on social media. I'm at _ Zach Griff on Twitter and Instagram, and looking forward to chatting.
Zach, I followed you for like the longest time, because I went through a phase of life where I held Platinum Medallion and Platinum Pro at the same time for 2 years. So I used to follow like the Points Guy stuff all the time. So it's like actually pretty cool to get to talk to you, because I was reading all the time. And I was just kind of curious, like, how do you get into that? Because outside of being like a corporate consultant, like that interacts with it, how do you get into something like that?
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned corporate consulting, because I actually started my career in consulting as a consultant. So after I graduated from college, I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do. And I always had this passion. I love traveling, aviation, being on the road. I loved it. I mean, I more than that, I also was really good at the credit card points loyalty game. I was signing up for cards, redeeming points, learning all the ins and outs, especially, during college when you have a lot more free time. And so afterwards I figured, okay, I'll go be a consultant, because, one of the big, in my view, perks of the job is you can just be on the road Monday to Thursday, new cities, new places, new hotels, new airports, airlines, so I thought like, oh, this would be great for me. And what I really learned during that experience was that, I like the travel, but the travel was just a vehicle through which to get to your client and to go and, work on their problems, as opposed to, enjoying the experience itself. And so there was a point during my consulting days that the Points Guy, who I also, like you, Drew, follow religiously, I learned a lot through, the content that they put out. They were looking for someone to join the team. And they were looking really for someone who had more of a kind of quantitative background that could help them, really solve some issues on their internal just travel methodologies and frameworks and things. And those are all things that I was doing basically in consulting, but I wasn't doing it, necessarily for clients that I was super interested in. Whereas at the Points Guy, I'd be doing it, for a company that's into travel, that's working with airlines and hotels. And so, when I saw that they were looking for this, I was like, okay, they're going to probably get a million applicants. Like, what are the chances that I could, that I'd actually get the job? But I applied, and that's really how it all got started.
So were you like a every week, Monday to Thursday guy, just out there on the grind like I was? And then just one day said, this is it?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't necessarily every Monday to Thursday that I was on the road. And, it could be some weeks I wasn't. And what I actually really enjoyed were the trips where it was not necessarily Monday to Thursday. It was, you know, Monday to Tuesday, and then maybe you'd get another client in the back half of the week, and that way there'd be a little bit more traveling. I felt like I was part of a grind when I was in the airports, you know, Monday mornings, and everyone was in their suits and everyone was heading out to, you know, their places, their Dallas, their Denver's, their, you know, Chicago's, wherever it was. And everyone coming back Thursday afternoon. And, you know, obviously the pandemic's changed a lot of that, but that's really how I got started in it from a professional perspective.
Have you always loved aviation?
Oh my God. I mean, I think that I look back at my childhood, and as I think about aviation, airlines, and, you know, I remember my first international flight. I think it was probably in the year 2000, maybe 1999. I couldn't be more than like 6 or 7 at the time. And my family took us on a trip. My parents don't care much for aviation other than that it gets you to cool places. My parents don't care much for aviation. They, you know, for them, it is a method to get to cool places as opposed to, you know, where, how are we going to fly and what aircraft and all this stuff. So back in the day, certainly they didn't. Obviously now I have this big passion. So they buy into it a little bit, but it was on a 747 at the time. I don't recall the exact airline. I absolutely remember it was 747. Because we were in the back, and I remember going up to the window and being like, oh my God, this is so cool. You have an upper deck. I remember even asking the gate agent, is there any way to sit in the upper deck? And of course we were on, you know, bare bones economy tickets. So the answer to that was absolutely not. But it was really that experience and just, you know, the marveling at the fact that you have this massive aircraft, right? You know, getting off the ground, taking you, you know, 12 hours later and you're on the other side of the world. And, you know, I was young at the time, but as I grew older, I flew more often, especially in high school and certainly in college, going back home and going on trips with friends and whatnot. And what really propelled this love for aviation and travel was when I started, you know, learning more about the credit card industry and how, you know, you can, you know, rack up points and miles through, you know, your credit cards. And it was one day my dad, he came home from work with the mailer from American Express. And it was like, you know, earn 100,000 points worth, you know, $2,000 in free travel just by like signing up and spending a little bit of money on this card. I'm like, what the heck? Like, you know, you're going to give me, you know, free flights just for, you know, using a credit card. And this was way before I even knew, you know, calculus or whatever. I was young, you know, I was young. And so I was like, okay, we'll play around and see what happens here. And really from there, it's taken off, and that, you know, obviously super into it. You know, I find aviation is like this passion. And certainly I find this among many of the people who I meet and who are so passionate about the industry. You know, they got into it as a young kid or in their childhood or whenever, but then they just can't, you know, seem to escape. It's like becomes their world and certainly become mine.
Yeah, I think we're both the same way. It seems like it's a bug, and once you get it, man, you can't get out of it. I don't know. I mean, that propelled me to quit my job and go to flight school and pursue this full time. So it makes you do crazy things. It's awesome.
Yeah. I never considered being a pilot, and then one day I was traveling to work. I was like, wow, that guy has it a lot better than I do because he doesn't have to go on Excel tonight. And that's just such a better job than what I'm doing. And I went all in. Kind of a side question here. So you were talking about how impressed you were by the 747. You know, this morning at the terminal, someone actually compared the CRJ-200 to the 747 in how impressed they were by it. And it was a really cool moment. But I'm kind of curious, what is your favorite plane?
That's a good question, but I will first say that I hope that you gave that person a very good lesson in determining the difference between one of the worst jets in the sky and one of the best jets in the sky.
we're gonna have to make Zach a model. We're gonna
yeah. God, the CRJ200, man. I mean, if anyone says that that's their favorite plane, I mean, there's something wrong with them, right? I mean, that's no shade at any of you folks who are flying it, but I mean, from a passenger perspective, that is not.
It's definitely a little more comfortable up front. I'll give it that.
Yeah,
we get a good marginally more air conditioning up front.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Favorite plane? I mean, I hope it's not cliche to say the Airbus A380. I mean, I don't know, from a passenger perspective, like, I've had such incredible experiences on that aircraft. Obviously, with the points and miles that I have and that we use at the company, I've been, you know, spending so much time always thinking about business class and first class. And I mean, yes, that plane may not be commercially feasible into the future, especially with the pandemic and how we're seeing how, you know, demand patterns are changing. And, you know, obviously no US carrier, you know, ever, you know, took advantage of that aircraft or bought that aircraft. I mean, you know, it works for the Emirates and the Singapore Airlines of the world. But from a passenger perspective, to me, that plane is like the most impressive. And, you know, you have Emirates with, you know, an onboard bar and onboard shower and, you know, all the cool things that they do over on those planes. And I mean, I love a lot of aspects of the aviation industry. As a passenger, that is the most fascinating aircraft, that you got this, you know, massive double decker. You know, the way I was just at JFK yesterday, working on a project, and I, you know, obviously the A380 is certainly back. It's flying again to the United States. And JFK, I think it's 3 or 4 a day now. And I saw one, I think it was an Emirates A380 taking off, and I saw a Korean one coming in, and it just looks great. And I always, every time I see it, I'm just reminded of all the awesome experiences I've had inside of one of them.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it kind of goes back to the 747, which you were saying, you know, it's insane how you can load up 100, you know, 300, 400 people in these airplanes. They weigh over 1 million pounds on takeoff, and they can fly for, you know, 10, 12, 14 hours, span the world. And when you see the A380, it's insane. You know, it's just huge. It's unlike anything else you can see. You know, the 74 is iconic, but like the A380 is a monster because it, you know, it goes the whole way as a double decker. So it's a super cool airplane. You know, I don't think a lot of people have the opportunity to fly on them. So like, that's super cool to hear your perspective. Obviously, you know, that's what you guys do, and that's, you know, why we go to the Point Sky. But it's really cool to hear about the, you know, the showers on board and see all of this stuff that you can take advantage of in these different airlines and different countries and loyalty programs. So,
do you get to go? That's cool. I will mention before we you know, stop or you know, forget this conversation is, I also, you know, obviously the A380 is aspirational for me. It is, you know, it always marks that I'm on an international trip, long haul trip. You know, you don't find the A380 flying, you know, your short 2 or 3 hour hop. But I've been super impressed with the Airbus A220. You know, as I think about something more, you know, attainable, certainly in the United States. You know, what was the C series? You know, when it came out, I loved that plane. It was so unique. Passengers love it. Everyone who, you know, reaches out, you know, the airlines are taking, certainly here in the US, they're really going all in. You have Delta, you have JetBlue, you have Breeze ordering a bunch of these planes. And, you know, those are awesome replacements for some of the other, you know, domestic workhorses that have been out there. And so, you know, yes, of course, that you've got the A380s and all the, you know, fancy aspirational, as you mentioned, Matt, just these really impressive planes. But, you know, I think the domestic experience is getting better with the likes of, you know, the A220, even, you know, A321neo, you know, that some airlines are adding to.
Well, it's funny because Matt and I recently actually flew on a 220 together. And I think at one point we, like, were joking about how it's hard to believe that the people who designed this plane also designed the CRJ. Like, there is they share some lineage together. And yeah, it's actually people, it's a people, really incredible
yeah,
plane.
Yeah. It's awesome, and you know, a lot of people probably don't even know that, right? Because obviously, with the change in ownership, and you know, obviously it being under Airbus right now, you know, I was once sitting next to. I went down to a Breeze for anyone who's listening. You may not have heard of Breeze. Obviously, that's a new airline from David Neeleman, and he has a bunch of cool, you know, he founded JetBlue. He's, you know, worked with TAP Portugal and some other ones. And you know, they have a bunch of bases doing smaller stuff, but he has, I think, 80 A220s on order. He has a few of them now. And I went down to Mobile, to see their first one out of the Airbus facility there. And sitting across from me on this flight down to Mobile was the actual, kind of brainchild of the A220. I don't have, I think his name is Rob Dewar. If I hope I'm not butchering the pronunciation or forgetting it, but he was sitting next to me on the plane, and he was also going to this event, and you know, I was just asking him questions and it's funny enough, we were flying on a CRJ-200 on down there. We connected, you know, I don't know, somewhere where, you know, I couldn't get to Mobile from New York nonstop, and neither could he from, I think he was coming from Montreal, because that's where he's based. And we were just chatting about, you know, the Airbus A220, and he was the guy who thought about it and who put it all together. I mean, really cool stuff.
So I guess this is kind of something that I want to ask you about, but like, what does a day in the life look like, right? You get to meet all these cool people. You just randomly sit next to the father of the A220. You know, what do you wake up and do? Do you just like, oh, there's this cool plane being, you know, launched in this base and we're going to go fly on it to celebrate that? Like, what does the day look like?
I mean, I'll say that no 2 days are the same. It really ranges. So obviously I have contributions that go on that, you know, touch on aviation, airlines, airports. This week I was home the entire week. I went to JFK yesterday. Super easy. I think I mentioned this earlier. I'm based in, I have an apartment in Manhattan in New York City. The Points guys headquarters are just a few blocks away. And so when I am in the city, when I'm home, you know, I'm in the office and, you know, we're chatting, we're brainstorming about new planes, new experiences, new what's new in travel and how are we going to go cover it? You know, but I spend at least 50% of my time on the road too. And, you know, as you mentioned, Drew, it spans the gamut. You know, for the past few months, certainly in the beginning of the year, it felt like it was all airports. You know, Delta has their new LAX terminal. The new LaGuardia terminal just got unveiled. We obviously have Orlando coming up here shortly. And so, you know, there are new airports that are out there. Next week, I'm heading over to Amsterdam to fly KLM's new premium economy cabin that they are inaugurating in a few days here. And so, you know, that I flagged as something that's new, exciting in the industry. People are, you know, we know that premium economy has become, you know, this more important cabin on international flights, and you know, KLM's the latest international carrier to lean into that trend. So it's like, okay, great. Like, let's go fly it. Let's go experience it. But, you know, as I think back to that Breeze event, it was, you know, Breeze is like, this is our first A220. It's going to usher in a brand new era for us. Like, you know, we'd love to have you and experience it. And that's awesome. You know, I also, one of the things I love, and especially from a passenger experience perspective, and certainly from our readers who are so engaged with, you know, what products they're flying, what are the aircrafts like, is I always want to be on the first or one of the first flights or on board a cabin of a plane that's new, or if it's a new LOPA that, you know, they may have just had a retrofit or something. So whether that's, you know, as I think back, last few months, it's, you know, Delta has new A321neos. They bought some old Airbus A350s from LATAM when they went bankrupt, and so they added a new LOPA into their fleet with that A350. You know, United is gearing up to retrofit some of their 767-400s, which are kind of the last big fleet type that doesn't have their fancy Polaris and Premium Plus cabins. So as these planes are coming back into service, it's like, either I want to be there for a tour on the ground, or I want to be, you know, the first flyer, second flyer. So, well, hey, I have a list. I'm tracking all this stuff. It's like, once it gets into service, it's like, great. Like, you know, let's flex. I'm going to go do that.
So how do you track like these fleet movements and decisions then? Like, is it just reading, following Twitter accounts, or are you invited to these things? You know, Ed Bastian just shoot you a quick text, hey, this is about to go down, or like, how does that tracking work for you?
I mean, you know, we work a lot with the airline communications department. So most of the major airlines, they have, you know, in-house folks who work on both internal and external communications. And I'm, you know, very close friends with, at this point, many of the, you know, biggest players across the industry, you know, all the airlines and all their different folks. And so, you know, they will give me a heads up that, you know, things are happening and, you know, we're having an event or whatnot. But for me, it's really important. I stay on top. I just have a running note on my iPhone as I just think of things. I mean, I'll just pull it up here. I'm looking. It's like, you know, things, airports and airlines, it's like an aircraft, like, you know, United, you know, 767-400 is in retrofit, so it's on my list. JFK Auckland, Air New Zealand is launching shortly. It's on my list of things to do. We talked about Orlando as an airport. I also have, you know, Kansas City. They're also getting a big new terminal. So, you know, that's on my list. And, you know, one thing I reported on late last month was, you know, LaGuardia, Delta's bringing the new shortest route to LaGuardia from LaGuardia. I think it's 101 miles to Hartford, Connecticut. And, you know, hey, I'd love to fly that flight. I want to tell the story that, you know, I spent more time on the ground than I did in the air on, you know, LaGuardia's new 101 mile route. So it takes a lot of manual searching. I put a lot of alerts into Flight Radar 24. So I set alerts there on the registration numbers for planes that I know are, you know, in retrofit or going to be interesting for some reason or not. But, you know, as airlines make announcements, right? I don't know, you know, United or American will say like, oh, we're going to launch this new route, or we're going to take delivery of this new plane, or, you know, obviously we're talking a lot about aircraft, but it's the same is true with hotels and new technology and, you know, whatever, but it's, you know, hear the announcement and then just add it to my list and follow up and, you know, bug someone until we get on it.
Have you gotten to do the parallel reality experience in Detroit?
No, you know, I got invited to that also from the Delta folks, but it's, you know, one of the things that's been hardest for me is recognizing that there's more to life than just aviation and just, you know, traveling. I pay an absurd amount of money to live in New York City. For a good amount of my time at TPG, I forgot that, or I just, you know, was on the road all the time and just forget about that and the importance of being at home and, you know, seeing friends, seeing family. So over the past, you know, year, certainly this summer, I've been really, really intentional about what trips I take, where I go, and where I spend my time. And I'll give you an example. In June, I did three major review trips. So I flew that Delta A350, the one that they picked up from LATAM. I flew Etihad's first A350 from Abu Dhabi to New York. And I also did United, one of those cool new international routes. I went on the one from Newark to Mallorca, to Palma de Mallorca in Spain. And I did all three of those in direct turns. So, you know, a younger me would have absolutely said, great, that's, you know, nights in Abu Dhabi, that's nights in the ground in Santiago or Buenos Aires in South America. And then I, you know, get to spend some time in Palma. But I recognize I have a lot of plan, you know, my calendar, you know, just think about scheduling this call, how hard it's been. It's like, you know, the calendar is super busy, so much going on. It's like, I love flying. And for me, it's like, if I'm willing to do a direct turn for it, it means that I must love it. And I do it. No time on the ground, just, you know, flight.
How do you, or what does it entail when you like go to these locations? Do you then make, you know, obviously if you're doing a direct, you know, flight, you're getting off one airplane, hopping on another and off you go. But if you do nights in Palma or nights in Abu Dhabi, are you then also continuing the review? Are you going to certain hotels that you want to see? Are you doing certain excursions? Are you reviewing the whole way from start to finish when you're not doing a, you know, a quick turn in the airport?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, there's so many different types of trips that I take. So, you know, there, for instance, the three I mentioned in June, those are really about capturing content about the flight itself. These are very newsy flights that, you know, people want to read about, and we see it. There are trips where I'm going there and, you know, it's not just the flight. I'm going to review the hotel. We do less about, you know, on the ground excursions, tours and things like that. Hotels obviously have a big loyalty play. So I'm a big fan of Hyatt and their World of Hyatt loyalty program, you know, great transfer partner with Chase, and you can, you know, send your Chase points over to them, and, you know, pretty rewarding elite program with World of Hyatt. So I cover a lot of, you know, those types of hotels when I'm on the ground. I'm very active on social media and posting, you know, where I go, where I eat. I think that, you know, I've built a following there because people are interested in seeing those aspects of my travel. Whereas, you know, on the website, I may only write about the hotel and, you know, certainly the flight. And maybe if there was some, you know, incredible tour or some incredible excursion or something I did. But, you know, I give a more comprehensive recap of the trip and, you know, what I'm doing, certainly on, you know, social media and stories and things like that on Twitter. And people, you know, seemingly love to see, you know, what's going on and, you know, how do I travel type thing.
Oh, dude, I love it.
Yeah,
I'll sit there and I'll flip through each one. I'm like, oh, that meal looks great. As I like dive into the leftovers of a snack basket from like a previous one. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, this looks.
You mentioned earlier too that no 2 days are the same. So like, what are your favorite parts of the job? What are the best days? And then what are the not so good days that people don't get to see on social media, right? Everybody plays it off, you know, is it days sitting at home writing all these articles and, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning and you're exhausted, or what are these best parts and not so best parts?
I mean, you hit the nail on the head there, right? So no one sees the work that goes into, you know, the finished product. And so I'll give you a little bit more detail. We'll take, for example, the Delta A350 flight. So that I took, this was back in June. You know, if anyone wants to go read it, just, you know, Google the points guy, Delta, LATAM A350, first look or review or whatever. And, you know, so that's a plane that I was about a week late on. The plane went into service maybe a week before I flew it. I wanted to really be on it. It was a story actually I broke. I broke the story that Delta was taking delivery of this and that it would have a different, you know, LOPA and different product and everything. And I knew that this was something I really wanted to be on. So I flipped. Yep.
Can you define LOPA for everybody listening?
Yes, sure. Layout of passenger arrangement, I think it.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. You can fly for the airlines and not even know what a LOPA is.
Okay. I'm sorry. So
okay. Sorry to cut you off. Just wanted to get that out.
Yeah. So you know, this A350 had a different cabin configuration than any of the flagship ones in the fleet, and I really wanted to fly it. So when I saw that it was assigned to a route, so I went, I you know, go on to Flight Radar 24. I go into, you know, aircraft schedules. I see where it's assigned. It's like, great, I want to fly this. So I book it. I fly down from LaGuardia down to Atlanta. It's flying from Atlanta down to Santiago, Chile. And I fly the flight. The first 30 to 60 minutes of every flight is the most stressful for me. That's because that's where I capture most of my content. I always make a note to my colleagues at the points. I always, you know, try to hammer this home. The plane will never look as good as it does during boarding. Once, you know, other passengers are on it, once, you know, after the cleaning crew leaves, it becomes, you guys see it when you're, I'm sure, exiting your aircraft, it could look terrible. So for me, I'm always capturing content, videos, pictures, you know, horizontal stuff, vertical stuff, whatever I'm doing, I'm doing it. I'm trying to be the first person on board, whether that's through my airline status or pre-boarding or whatnot. And getting as much time as I can on the plane without other passengers. And that's what I'm, you know, doing for the first 60 minutes. I'm playing around with the seats. I'm going between the different cabins. I am, you know, putting the seat into bed mode. I'm reclining the seat. I'm opening the tray table. I'm playing around with the in-flight entertainment system. You name it. That is like the first, you know, kind of hour of a flight. And that's actually also the most exciting for me. It's like that adrenaline kicks in as, you know, we got, you know, ticking down till boarding. You know, I have perfected the, in my opinion, the getting on the plane and grabbing content in such a way that, you know, I can do it in 15 minutes now, and that, you know, I can go and relax and enjoy the rest of the flight and maybe write up the article or you know, edit pictures or whatnot. But those are the days that are the most exciting for me, is when I have, you know, something like that, especially, you know, when it's a quick turnaround also, right? So the A350 story, I flew the flight on, let's say, a Tuesday night, and then I had the story on the website live for people to read on Wednesday morning. So that was, you know, writing, that was editing pictures, that was uploading pictures, that was, you know, cropping things and whatnot, and getting it into a story with, you know, 100 pictures plus, you know, 2,000 words live on the website, and then, you know, onto social media. And for me, that is like the most exhilarating. That's so fun. What people don't see is, you know, I do spend a bunch of time in the office. I love my colleagues. I love the work, you know, the people I'm working with, and, you know, the company I work for is great. But you know, they don't see that I am slogging away sometimes just writing stories. And, you know, I read through the Cirium schedule updates every week. So that's, for those who may not be familiar, every weekend or really every day, airlines make schedule changes to their selling schedules. Cirium, a data provider that works through airline schedules, releases an update every single week on what's changed, basically. And, you know, I'm reading through those every week, and they're long. You know, this is every airline. I trim it down to the major U.S. ones, but still, you know, I'm getting many reports. I'm sifting through them, seeing what's newsy, what's interesting. Just this week, I caught some changes that Delta was making, you know, airlines cutting routes, cutting cities, adding cities. So I'm reading all these reports, and, you know, it's fun. I love it, but it's certainly not the most glamorous aspect of the job.
Yeah, that makes sense. That sounds awesome. So that was kind of one of the questions we had. What do you do to kill time on all these long flights? I assume you just work on editing the content, like you said, and putting it all together. Do you ever sit back and just kick it, watch some movies and relax?
You know, it kind of depends, right? So if I'm traveling during the work week, I'm almost always connected to Wi-Fi. I love following what's going on in the industry. I hate missing out on things, being late to stories. If it's during the workday on the East Coast, I'm almost always connected and working. I actually find, and I think a bunch of my colleagues would agree with me, is that I find that I do my best work on airplanes when I'm up, you know, cruising. I find that I'm focused, I'm less distracted, my phone's not necessarily buzzing, especially if I didn't connect my phone to Wi-Fi, and if I only connected like my computer to Wi-Fi, then, you know, I'm not getting the calls and whatnot. So I use airplanes, especially if it's I'm reviewing it. For me, I am the most fresh. The experience is in my mind right when I'm having it, as opposed to 2 weeks later when I go back and look at my notes and say, "Oh, what was that flight?" Well, you know, hey, I probably took six flights since, and it's probably harder to remember it. So as much as possible, I will get a good draft out of a story that I'm writing about a flight while I'm still on the flight. And maybe I'll, you know, sift through the pictures later. But for me, it's just putting pen to paper and getting some type of draft out there, you know, in my notes, so that I'm not going back and being like, oh, what was this like? And then, you know, it's the reader who ultimately loses in that case, because the details aren't as accurate. Or, you know, maybe I'm not including details that I'm thinking about while I am actually having that experience. And it's hard. I mean, I work really hard on this, but I think that the end of the day, the goal is to have a product or put out something that, you know, I'm proud of and that, you know, readers want to read. And that's the way for me to do it.
So we've talked a lot about a bunch of different experiences that you've had. What's the one standout one? Is there one that's like, this is the best one that I've had so far?
I mean, it's hard, right, to boil it down to a few. I love days at the airport. When I've been very, you know, you guys get to put on your yellow vests and go and do, you know, walk arounds, you know, before departure, and you're on the ramp. But, you know, the average Joe like me does not always get to be on the ramp. And especially when I'm close to the runways, I've had some incredible experiences. Houston, LAX, you know, just like taking my camera and just watching planes take off from, you know, 30 feet, 50 feet, whatever the safe distance is right in front of me. I mean, those are incredible days. And, you know, a word I use a lot is AvGeek, aviation geek, and you guys may have heard of it. I definitely believe that I am an AvGeek. I mean, there's something about that that's just incredible. Viv, I really had to narrow it down to one experience, and this is funny. I'm Jewish. That's my thing. Back during the pandemic in December 2020, there were all this talk, and the personal interest of mine is there was all the peace treaties between Israel and the United Arab Emirates, and that was a very big deal at the time, certainly in the region and really in a big, you know, geopolitical landscape. And I was able to, despite, you know, the countries being closed and all this stuff, I was able to get on that inaugural flight from Tel Aviv in Israel to Dubai. That was, you know, I love aviation. I love passenger experience. I love all this stuff. But as I think about a story that really kind of resonated most with me on a personal level, you know, taking my passion in aviation, bridging gaps between cultures and countries that, you know, once never spoke to each other. I mean, that you couldn't ask for more from a story like that.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's super cool to see that and hear that, you know, that you got to do that. That's really cool.
Have you ever considered like wanting to be a pilot, like getting a license or anything?
You know, I get that question a lot from friends and colleagues and whatnot. I mean, to be honest, obviously I have a lot of pilot friends now, folks who are, you know, out there every single day. I don't think that, you know, it's a lot of time, right? And it's expensive. It's hard, especially being based in Manhattan right now, you know, to have to find an airport nearby that, you know, has, you know, flight school and whatnot. Part of me is like, I kind of wish I got some type of license back in, you know, high school or college when I had a lot more free time. I was, you know, more available to do. I think that part of my life that ship has sailed kind of in terms of, you know, I don't think that's kind of the next pivot that I want to do. I don't know what's next. I love what I do. And I really feel like I'm providing a lot of value to readers in this industry in what I'm doing right now. And yes, I think that, you know, one of the things I've never done, and I have to do this at some point, is I've never sat jump seat on, you know, during a takeoff or landing. Obviously there are, you know, security things, but there are ways, you know, if I'm on a ferry flight or something. And so that's probably a bucket list item for me is, you know, sitting jump seat during, you know, takeoff or landing. The bigger the plane, the better. And you know, just kind of watching it all happen from, you know, a front row seat.
Yeah, that it would be. I think about that often too. It'd be cool to be able to take, you know, some friends and family and stuff in the jump seat. Obviously, the whole TSA thing makes that a little difficult. But yeah, you know, you never know. There could always be some way to make it work down the road eventually. But yeah, that it's pretty awesome.
Are the regulations as strict around that, like in Europe? Is it easier to be able to do it over there?
Yeah, I know some folks who I think there are some countries, depending on their regulations, that let you, if you're a media and you have, you know, permissions and whatnot. I think that, you know, I think a lot of it, you know, obviously, well, certainly in the US, you got, you know, your TSA and, you know, the rules are rules. Over there, depends on the country and whatnot. And, you know, the airline, a lot of it comes down to airline policy too. It's like, you know, maybe the country doesn't have a regulation around it, but then, you know, the airline says no, or the airline says yes. But I am hopeful that I will find an airline. And if any of you airline folks or international folks are listening and you want to invite me, I will happily make the journey to wherever it is, such that we have a fun experience like that. I will give lots of content to you. But yeah, it is a bucket list thing that I'm definitely working on.
Have you ever flown a plane? Like been in the left seat of even a Cessna and gotten to fly it?
I have never formally sat, you know, or sat left seat and flown a plane. I think I went to Hawaii once and did some type of, you know, tour or whatever. And then the instructor was like, okay, you can, you know, be at the controls, whatever, you know, that for like, you know, the the 60 seconds or whatever. It's certainly in Africa. I've been to Tanzania a few times, and you know, over there, some of the smaller airlines are like, okay, you know, we there's only one pilot, and then there are two controls, and they're let me, you know, control the plane or whatnot. But you know, very much in air quotes. But yeah, I mean, I'm in awe of the folks who do it, though.
I was say, find yourself in Minneapolis. We'll hook you up. We'll take you around.
Yeah, I would have loved to be here recording this podcast with you guys in person. I mean, this goes, you know, to the reader, to all the viewers and listeners. It's like, it's hard. I mean, schedules, right? Like, I can imagine what your guys' schedules like with bouncing around. You're probably all over the place all the time.
Yeah.
All right. We had some quick takes we wanted to get from you. All right.
Yeah.
So we have like just top a list. Just what comes to mind. Okay.
Yeah. Top of mind. First answer. Just off.
Favorite
go.
Country you've been to? Tanzania.
Favorite airline?
Emirates. Best loyalty program?
Airline would be American Advantage. I didn't give an American enough credit in this podcast. I do a lot of work with the folks there. I do a lot of folks work with all the folks in all the different airlines. So you know, if someone's listening and be like, oh, my airline didn't get a shout out. Like I will say I've never flown Sun Country or Allegiant. So at some point I do need to change that. But that is on my list of things to change. But I've flown every other U.S. carrier. I major one. I work with all the different airlines. But American definitely deserves a shout out there for best loyalty program. I talked about a hotel loyalty program. Love Hyatt. Super, super duper rewarding. Obviously, they don't have properties everywhere. But if they have properties where you're going, can't recommend it enough. Credit card wise, love Amex and Chase Points.
I think we just figured out the business case for you to come to Minnesota.
Yeah. I'd love to pair a Sun Country run with the landline bus. Done landline once with United from Denver over to Breckenridge, and I thought it was an awesome concept. I think that's certainly the future for smaller cities. Right, we're seeing airlines pull out of them, you know, left and right, especially now with the pandemic and all the, you know, pilot shortages and regional issues that have gone on. I think I would love to see, and I know they do even like some smaller vans bringing folks to the airport and stuff. So that is definitely the business case for me out there.
We can make a trip, and you can go up to the North Shore and experience all Minnesota has to offer. They take you up to Duluth. It's the whole work. So make it. It's a good one.
And then you can fly a SkyWest 200. Right back down from Duluth back to me.
There you go. Look at that.
I got to do it soon though, because my patience for cold weather, and this hasn't come up, but look, I live in New York. It's bad, but it's not Minnesota.
No, it's not. Yeah. And it's rapidly approaching.
So are we going to find that more Latin America coverage kicks up sometime in the next few months? We're going to be seeing,
New York is about as cold as I'll take it. Went to school in Philadelphia. That was definitely a little bit warmer than New York. I don't think I mentioned this. I grew up in South Florida. So, you know, I'm very much warm blooded. I'm used to, you know, hot summers, hot temperatures. And certainly I spend as much as time as I can each winter in Florida, going back home, visiting parents and family stuff there. And there's no better place to be, in my opinion, there or California, maybe in the winters. And I do love skiing and I love being on the mountain, but it's my patience for winter is dwindling every year.
I agree. All right, let's get another quick take here. Favorite airport?
I know you asked for the first thing that comes to mind. I think LaGuardia deserves most improved. I think that Salt Lake City is awesome, but too much walking. This will be very controversial for some, but I absolutely love LAX. I think LAX does the variety of traffic that you have there is unparalleled. Three major hubs, four, I guess, you know, Southwest big operation, Delta, United, American, and all the international carriers. You cannot get better traffic there. And I love to, you know, go spotting every so often where, you know, I take my picture, go grab a bunch of photos for the Points Guy website. You can't get better than LA.
Live in Southern California, though, and drive to LAX and take an hour to get from the 5 Or no, you take, I believe it's the 110 or the 105, and you get off at Sepulveda, and it took you an hour to get there, and then you spent an hour on Sepulveda to get, and have you ever had to do that part of it, though? Because that might change your tune a little bit on LAX.
Well, that's why it's controversial, because almost all the time when I do LAX, I stay at the Hyatt Regency there, right, the closest airport hotel, on purpose, because I walk to and from LAX, if I'm there for meetings or whatnot, even if I have meetings in the city. I'll stay maybe in like Santa Monica or something that's, you know, certainly closer. And I'll arrange my flight time such that it's either a red eye or an early morning flight that I don't have to worry as much about the traffic. But you know, that's a real issue. But when I can, I'm staying at that Hyatt Regency and I'm walking to the airport and just, I'm an advocate walking outside, you know, you're smelling, you know, Jet A fuel and hearing, you know, loud engines and getting great, great shots of aircraft coming in and out. Like that's me in a candy store right there.
I will say I was surprised to hear Salt Lake City over like Changi in Singapore.
Yeah, because Salt Lake, man, have you had to do that walk? Like if you walk with like four people, only three of you get to those gates. Like someone, I think there's been some like memes of like the Oregon Trail and like people die of dysentery. You know, on the way over to
they really have to get that that pedestrian walkway, or they were talking about building a train or something underneath. I think they do have the tunnel space there to do it. I don't know why they should have done it originally, but I have fun from the B gates. I like walking. Actually, I'm active. I love exercising. You know, that is how I reset my body clock when I'm traveling and stuff. And for me, actually, and I know it's again, some people are connecting in Salt Lake and it's a pain in the butt to, you know, make that connection. But if I can get some more steps in between flights, I actually find that to be very good for my body, for my health, and for just my sanity. You know, I love sitting on planes, but you know, transcon after whatever it is, it is good to get steps in. And so I complain about it, but I don't. I'm not nearly as vocal as some of those memes and things like that. But, you know, going back to your point, Matt, yes, I didn't even think about, you know, obviously Singapore and, you know, Dubai and what are some of the other kind of Europe. None of them really do it for me in Europe. I do like Zurich just because it's easy and quick and convenient, but none of the major ones in Europe really do it for me.
All right. Where's the best Sky Club location?
LAX, no question. Ooh. Have you been to the new one?
I've been to all of them. I think it's the Atlanta Bravo.
Oh, come on. The new LAX club has this incredible, the best aviation geek spotting in the entire country is from the Atlanta Sky Club, new Sky Deck. They did put up glass. So I was there during a pre-opening tour when there was no glass up from the deck, the outdoor deck. I think I even posted a story, like, you know, the best shots that I grabbed from, I mean, this is, you know, incredible stuff. I've got to say that's for sure for me, the best one. The other thing to note actually about Delta, I wrote a story about this. They are going to be doing a Sky Club for Delta One passengers. So separate, nicer stuff. So a lot of exciting things coming with Delta.
What's your favorite airplane meal?
I have a bit of a dietary restriction in that I basically eat pescatarian. Don't eat meat or, you know, beef or stuff or chicken. For me, I like the airlines that do a la carte dining as much as possible so I can kind of mix and match things. So those are things like Etihad and they have a great, you know, mix and match program, which I really like. I actually find sometimes that flying, you know, carriers based in Asia isn't as good for my dietary restrictions because, you know, there are a lot of ingredients I've never heard of or things. But I am a big fan of the AVML special meal, which is Asian vegetarian special meal. So it's not just, you know, kind of regular vegetarian. They add, you know, spices and Indian curries and things like that. So for me, that is my go-to when the regular menu doesn't work for me.
Aisle or window?
Window, no question.
Cool.
I became an aisle person, but all right.
No. Window for life.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Of course, we need it. Yeah.
I will say for me, what I love is I love to be a window and aisle for life. So those are, you know, the pods that are by themselves. E175, my favorite domestic first class seat on the A side. there in first class, you've got both a window and an aisle with the 1x2 configuration. Mm-hmm. So if I do find 175s or 170s flying around, I will go out of my way typically to route myself on those. But obviously when in long haul cabins, as much as possible, if I'm in business class, I'll definitely choose the solo seat that's also on the aisle and has a window view.
You know, it's funny, Matt and I were talking about it recently, but like, it feels like everybody flies around with their windows closed now. I don't get it. Like,
yeah, it should
rows
be
rows and rows of people with their windows closed.
Windows should be open on like, that should be like mandatory. I mean, it's like, that's why I'm, I mean, part of the reason I love flying is looking out the window.
All right, I think it's time for trivia. I think you'll do pretty well. Okay, so number one, how many MQMs do you need to be a Delta Diamond?
125,000.
There we go. Winner, winner.
Nice. All right. According to TPG, how much should I value one Sky Mile at?
Oh, that changed recently.
Did it really?
1.36.
We had one, but if it just changed.
I think we went out and did a valuations change for Delta, American and United, where we try to make it a little bit more realistic to a current, to current kind of redemptions and how people are using their miles. So it's something around, I was going to say 1.2. It could, honestly, for me, one is about where I always end up with them, because Delta's a great airline, but SkyMiles is not, you know, the strongest loyalty program.
What is a loyalty point?
That is the way that you earn American status. You earn one loyalty point for every redeemable mile, for almost every redeemable mile you earn with American.
Look at that. All right, we're 3 for 3. We'll give you the SkyMiles perk point value. All right. Which domestic airline has the most first class seats on an Airbus 319?
United.
We've got Delta as the answer.
Does United also go three rows?
They are on a retrofit project right now to go from 8 to 12.
Oh, see, I can't keep up with that. How would I know?
See,
that?
That's like cutting edge stuff. <That's>
You are asking great questions, though. I guess Delta does three rows on their 319. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, they definitely have more of their fleet in the 319 at 12.
This is actually kind of a bold, but like when I used to fly between Dulles and Minneapolis, I'd actually look for the CRJ flights over the A319 because your upgrade odds were better on a CRJ than they were on an A319 from like a first class seats available to total seats ratio. Like that's how.
Those are the games that I know a lot of our readers and certainly myself play. You know, it's like that's how you maximize your upgrade odds. Is, you know, take a look at, you know, the percentage of premium seats that there are on this aircraft. It's like the fewer there are, just that the math tells you the odds are lower.
That was for me one thing where I always struggled with like American was it just there was a smaller amount of it. I thought it had the best first class, but I struggled with. There'd be like four, so there'd be eight, I think it would be 12 seats available on a transcon flight. And I'm like, ugh, like this is all or nothing on this one.
Yeah.
Especially if you were on like an old US Airways A321.
Oh, exactly.
It was all or nothing on a 5-hour flight. Okay. If I am a senator level traveler, what airline do I fly often?
Lufthansa.
Oh my God. How do you? Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Let's go. All right, this one might do it. And I'm gonna probably murder these names, but if my menu was designed by Jerry McLaughlin and Jerry Gully, what airline am I on?
No idea.
Yes.
No idea.
That would be United.
Okay. You know,
that's what a basic Google search returned.
Yeah, you know what I'll say about that. Onboard catering is like that's really been a struggle during COVID. I'm sure you guys see it, you know, on your flights. It's like, you know, just they haven't been brought up, and all the airlines tout that they have these partnerships and stuff, but at the end of the day, what you get served is what you care about, and it hasn't been all that great recently.
Forbidden pavilion class is on which airline?
I've got to imagine an Asian carrier. Air China. I don't know.
Yeah.
Really?
Let's go.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad.
Actually, Forbidden Pavilion, that's JetBlue. No, we don't.
Air China. Yeah, good one. All right, last one. This will just test your domestic legacy carrier knowledge here. Name the status levels of the three legacy carriers in the U.S. So Delta, American, and United. Name their status levels of each of them.
So Delta is silver, gold, platinum, and diamond. United is silver, gold, platinum, 1K. And American is gold, platinum, platinum pro, and executive platinum.
Bonus points if you can name the invite only statuses that they have.
We got those too. We got Delta 360, we got American Concierge Key, and you have United Global Services.
All right, before we gotta go, I got one question for you. Where did American come up with the names for theirs? Everything is platinum, but you're like a different adjective of platinum.
You know, I asked them that question too, why they decided, you know, why is there no silver, right, with American? Why did they start at gold? And, you know, they didn't really have a good answer for it. I've never heard a compelling reason for, hey, we wanted to add this next tier, but we wanted, you know, I guess they didn't want to downgrade current platinums to gold. So they had to kind of keep the platinums at the platinum tier. And then what's between platinum and then executive platinum? And then they said, oh, okay, well, if we're going to keep platinum, then I guess we'll call it platinum pro.
So I heard platinum pro, like from what I read, I think on one of your articles a long time ago, was like the platinum pro wasn't even like a thing. It was, they were the last one to add the fourth and they had to sneak that in there.
Exactly.
And then only gold and platinum actually just started getting complimentary upgrades.
Yeah.
That's like a new thing
on
flights over 500 miles because you have those 500-mile upgrade certificate things that you got to spend money on.
You recall everything that you mentioned is accurate.
Well, you knocked trivia relatively out of the park. I guess I should have made it a lot harder. Like, how many seats are on this? Or actually, here's a good one. One last one, since I just pulled up your A350 article. How many seats are in the Comfort Plus cabin on that A350?
Oh, it's a lot. I think it's 63.
Because you said it was the largest Comfort Plus cabin of any plane.
Yeah, it's 63, right? 62?
It says...
Do a command F for 63. I think it's 63.
63-watt power adapter.
Huh.
But not a 63.
What is it?
60.
It's got to be in the 60s. Maybe I didn't write it. It's 63. I'm on Delta website.
Is it?
63, yeah.
There you go. Well, I guess he was right. I was wrong. But that conveniently is the power wattage of your adapter.
During that flight.
Delta did a good job with continuity there, the numbers.
Yeah.
All right, Zach. That's it.
Awesome. Thanks, guys, so much. This was super fun. I hope that the content comes out good for you guys. Appreciate all the back and forth. Great to meet you. Look forward to coming to visit you guys in person sometime soon.
This was another episode of Living in Flight. If you liked this episode, please make sure to subscribe for more exclusive aviation content. Have any topic ideas or want to be featured on our podcast? Send us a message at listen@livinginflight.com. Thank you for joining us. And until next time, this is Living in Flight.